Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
As Rosh Hashanah approaches, it's not just about prayer and shofar. It's actually about the food. No, it's not. It's about gathering around the table. Yes, that's what it is. It's about meaning, tradition, and just a little culinary magic. I think that Jewish husbands around the Jewish world had the same conversation that I did last night with my wife, my wife had with me last night, which was to say, "How, please put down your phone for a minute because I need you to concentrate." And I thought, oh gosh, what have I done? It turned out that all I needed to do is listen to the list of food to say, to verify if we've got enough. Now, the truth is, it was irrelevant whether I said it was or wasn't, because she decided, I have no idea actually what she decided, and she does leave things off the list because those are just extras, but they don't count. So I have no doubt that this conversation was happening throughout the Jewish world last night. We are joined this morning by an incredible person. He's a chef and a rabbi, Josh Weisberg. We wanted to talk to him about Rosh Hashanah food and if we've got enough. Good morning. Thank you for joining us. So do you think we've got enough? Do you think my wife has enough food?
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning from Jerusalem. How are you?
I am very well, thank you. Okay, you know what? It's not a fair way to start an interview because the bloke thinks I'm completely mad. He's got no idea where this interview is going. But is it not? Are we not all connected, Jewish souls connected through the anxiety of not having enough food for our guests?
Yeah, I think that fear is true, and somehow still we always have the leftovers for the next year. I mean, it's just an enormous amount of food, especially on Rosh Hashanah when you have all the simanim. The first course of all the simanim is enough to feed an army in our house. So, and then on top of that you have the soups, and then the tzimis, and the matzo balls, and the lamb. It's really an endless meal.
It really is. How much of it, what I find interesting is that certain things, even though they are maybe simanim or maybe they are just traditional, they take on this notion as though they are halakha, Jewish law. And I always try and say at home, you know, you don't have to eat, this amount of carrots in 30 seconds, whatever it is, like you would need to eat matzah on
leaning to your left, right? Right,
exactly. But
although actually the simanim do appear already in the Yerushalmi and the Talmud. They appear very early. And so this idea of using sort of the excitement about the food and then articulating a prayer for the year is actually a very, very deep-rooted custom. It goes very, very far back.
Oh, so tell me about that. I'm fascinated because I've always also thought, like, is that what we do? Like, is that who we are? We're such a not a fact-based religion, but we interrogate things. You know, do I really think that eating, whatever I'm eating is going to bring that to our world? What is the concept behind the simanim?
Well, I think the concept behind the simanim is that Judaism, you know, unlike some other major religions, really believes in bringing out the sanctity in physical experience, and also in the pleasures of life, in the joys of life. We know that Judaism is overall not an ascetic religion. It really believes that one can throw oneself into life and take pleasure in life, but that if one can do that and then find a deeper meaning and connect it to the larger meaning in life and connect it to God and to our faith, then it raises up raises up the experience and turns it into also a spiritual experience, not bypassing the physical, but really bringing it out and making it powerful. So if you're able to eat whatever of the simanim it is and really look forward to it, be excited about it, be aware of it, enjoy the flavor, look, you know, have anticipation, but then pause for a minute before you say it and say, "Yehi Ritzon, God, I just want to tell you that I'm about to eat this pomegranate, or I'm about to eat this fish head or lamb or whatever it is, you know, the kra or the karti, whatever, the leeks. But I really want to take a moment before I take tremendous pleasure in eating this and thank you, and also to ask to open myself up to the fact that I really need a new good year and I'm looking to you. Then there's a lot of the ideas. There's a lot of joy in Shemaim, in heaven, because God sees us turning to him, and a lot of joy in our world because we're really excited about the food and we've connected the two rather than separate them. So the idea is to really allow the experience to raise the physical rather than to, to withdraw from it.
As a chef, there are a lot of traditional foods that we eat this time of year. My late grandmother used to make genuinely the worst semis that that anybody. No, my producer Google's looking at me. No, she did. The truth is, we don't actually know because my mother and her never got on. It was her mother-in-law, and then she would bring the timus, and I was convinced my mother would let it burn. So, just because. So I don't actually know. So I think she made the worst timus, but I don't really know that for a fact. How do you, as a chef, as somebody who understands the sea, traditional or heritage foods being passed down through generations, you know, especially if they might not like it, or it goes out of trend and out of fashion. And we've got a lot of types of food that do go out of fashion.
Right. Well, I think that, we know scientifically that smell and taste are extremely rooted and connected to memory, the deeper parts, the deepest part of visceral memory in our minds. And so I've always, believed that when you grow up tasting a food in a certain context, in the context of a holiday, you know, whether it's parsley dipped in salt water on Pesach, or whether it's taste of the matzah, or whether it's the matzah balls, that those visceral experiences, the sort of primal experiences of smell and taste, which are probably the earliest senses to have developed, that evokes really profound emotions. It connects you to your grandmother's house. It can, in your case with the tzimis, that might not be a good thing, but it connects you to the house. You know, that each of us has memories of foods that we only ate with our grandmother, or that we only ate, and when you eat those foods, it's if you're brought back. And so the power of traditional foods is that, as I said before, it connects the physical and the spiritual, but here it's not just the physical and the spiritual, it's the physical and also your sort of collective tradition as a people. Because if so many Jews are eating cholent on Shabbat afternoon, and whether you spice it up and make it a little funky with some new spices or whether you don't, but it connects you to your memories of growing up. It connects you to your parents' memories of them growing up. Again, so long as these things have been passed down in the family. So they have tremendous, tremendous power, those tastes. So in our family, there are certain simanim that we all look forward to and we all like, and we only eat on Rosh Hashanah pretty much. Like I caramelized the leeks with honey. And that's something that everyone's sort of mouth starts watering already in Rosh Chodesh Elul, looking forward
to that. So that's amazing.
And I don't make it during the year.
Right. So that is an association of, in your family, that time of year, it just starts to bring all of that to you.
Yeah, exactly. And, and we use the same, we sing the Yehi Ratzons with the tune. We've always used the same tune. And it's just, it sort of allows you, without having to think about it, just to transport back into a moment of being connected to the past and to being sort of continuing and living in the past. And of course, it's rooted in a very pleasurable experience because it's just such a, the foods are good.
Any new trends that you're seeing, or anything that has evolved in the last couple of years that is worth sharing with us?
I don't know. I don't keep track so much of trends in the market, but I know that in my family, there was two or three of us who used to, we're a large family, but two or three of us used to love lamb. And over the last year or so, more and more people have sort of bought into it. So that's a trend in our family, is we're going to have lamb for on Rosh Hashanah evening. So that's
absolutely amazing. And I'd love to hear from listeners. What is the food in your family that you associate with Rosh Hashanah, with the Jewish New Year? And where did it come from? How far and how long has that been part of your family tradition? What do you think of when you taste that?
So for us, the simanim have always been the center of the meal, and my wife makes an incredible chicken soup, and she adds dlat, that's Israeli pumpkin, to it, so it gives it a very rich flavor. But that we have every Friday night, and with the knedlach, so the kids for that that's not Rosh Hashanah, that's just every Chag.
Right.
But I think for us, it's the Simanim. I think it's mostly the Simanim. And in our case, both my wife and I grew up in much less traditional families than we have now.
Right.
And so these specific recipes were not passed down to us. It's things that we took on, you know, when we got married in our early 20s, decided to become more observant. And so these are things that we've been doing for 30 years with our family, but not passed down on to us.
Absolutely.
So we miss that, you know, we're always a little bit envious of our friends who, you know, when they go into the holidays, are tapping into generational memories. But for us, it's something we've had to create, and we hope that our kids will then pass them on.
Well, I was just going to say, you've changed history because you've started creating that, and that then becomes the family law. That is absolutely wonderful. That's where we leave it. Rabbi Josh Weisberg, who's a chef, an Orthodox rabbi, professional chef, sharing his thoughts about Rosh Hashanah, wishing you a Shana Tova, Tukai.